Blog Talk Radio.
Yakuza! Yakuza! Yakuza Kick Radio!
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 This is the Bulldozer, Matt Tremont. And if there's one place to listen to on the internet, every Thursday, 9 p.m., Yakuza Kick Radio, Tremont says so. Who wants some?
God help us, Jesus! God and baby, Jesus! Help us!
Ladies and gentlemen of fucking America, this is Danny Havoc, and you have been listening to, or possibly are intending to listen to, the Yakuza Kick fucking radio. Fucking, yeah! Yakuza Kick Radio.
Hell fucking yeah!
My name is Justice Payne, and you are listening to Yakuza Kick Radio.
You're coming to come on Thursday night in California!
This is a brotherhood, and we all stick together. Like my nuts.
I ain't scared of you, motherfucker.
Yakuza Kick Radio, the best in internet wrestling radio, period, bar none, just like Adam Cole.
Everybody's a cunt but me in the world. I don't know what it is.
But you go to the back, and you tell your boss that there's a new Yakuza in town. And it's Yakuza Kick Radio, and we're taking over.
Yakuza Kick Radio has risen from the ashes of bad internet radio and become the premier place for any independent professional wrestler to stop and record their voice.
Well, this is Mr. Insanity Toby Klein, and if you're not listening to Yakuza Kick Radio, then you're weird.
Oh, I don't like the cut of your jib, fella.
This is Greg Excellent, Bearded Dragon of the Northeast. You're listening to Yakuza Kick Radio. If you're not, probably watching porn and you have this muted. You should be listening to it, Jason Mann.
Where are Biggie and Tupac?
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Give a nigga rope on this cowboy, got
you. All you have to do is listen to Yakuza Kick Radio, but you didn't. Now look at that doctor, homie. Fuck that. Black D. Holler.
Bullshit, man. Motherfucker.
Fuck you. Fuck you and fuck you. Who's next?
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the introduction.
Hosted by J-Cat Morris.
You are now listening to
Yakuza Kick Radio.
Welcome to Yakuza Kick Radio's CZW Classic Series. Today will be Paybacks Can Be a Bitch, back at Froggy's, back in 2001, February 4th, 2001. With me always is my co-host, Stan. What's going on, Stan?
Hey, Jay, what's going on? Got the weather changing up here. Got our first real fall day. And about ready to get into this action from Dover, Delaware, and Froggy's Bar and Grill.
Man, I'm having problems with my headphones here. There you go.
I was going to say, you might be on mute.
No, I heard you, but and then it cut out, and then all of a sudden I couldn't hear what you were saying. So you were talking about the weather.
Yeah, I said weather's starting to change up here in Canada, in the Toronto area. We got our first nice little fall day, and I'm ready to get into some Froggy's Bar and Grill action and the CZW show we're about to review.
Yeah, so I didn't remember until I saw the shirt that Zandig was wearing, because remember, you know, we had talked about the Wednesday shows. Apparently this was a thing that they did back then. And I do faintly remember something like that. Like, you know, they'd go off to Delaware and you're like, a Wednesday show. And you just kind of like, I don't know what the hell that's about. But this does come up again that this is another Wednesday show. The back of his shirt, which, you know, when you got a shirt for that Destruction in Dover, I don't know how many of those sold. But that's a rough piece of merch to be putting out if you wanted to put that effort into that show.
Yeah, I think it was 250 made and one purchased and worn, and that was by Zandig himself. What's interesting, yeah, Jay, is I did do some research that I just want to jump into real quick here because,
sure,
Froggy's Bar and Grill is closed. It is
okay.
No longer something that you can go to. It was sold at one point. It became a restaurant or live entertainment restaurant called the Boulevard, and that is also now closed. So it doesn't look like anything's in there currently. And then to your point, as I was looking up Froggy's Bar and Grill, there was actually only two events ever at Froggy's Bar and Grill when it comes to CZW, and those are the Destruction in Delaware show and this Payback show. So I had it in the notes for way later when Zandig comes out, but we'll touch on it here. You know, with that shirt and with that exactly what you were saying, you know, do you think this was something they wanted to become a thing, a Wednesday Night Wars with a Z, which was very very much in for the time?
Yeah.
And then maybe it just didn't happen, or, you know, the bar owner after the end of this show said, yeah, that's not for us, or whatnot. But it did look like something they wanted to get going, and then unfortunately do not.
Yeah, obviously there was a game plan for it long term, because Wednesday Night Wars doesn't say this is a one-off. Wednesday Night Wars doesn't say it's even two shows. It really kind of says that this is going to be our regular thing. We're doing our Wednesday night shows here at Froggy's, and there was a plan for it to go long-term. Now, I don't know what fell apart, minus what we're watching, but, you know, you feel like there was some kind of money deal. The bar expected a better turnout, or the company expected a better turnout, or kickback, or something. But, yeah, something fell apart there. But, again, like, you know, it makes you think, like, man, if there was a long-term plan for this, and it wasn't just like we were saying, just a little spot show, a little this, that, you know, from your storylines on that show, you really kind of bailed on what you were doing to put just some kind of show together, and it came off really bad. So, I mean, you got to kind of blame CZW a little bit for that if there was a long-term plan that didn't come to fruition.
Yeah, the first show definitely didn't help. The crowd was better here, right? And I don't want to get too far into it, but it is a better show. But then again, you know, I think pretty much anything could have been a better show than the first one. Not giving away too much on that piece of it. But I also, you know, again, at the very end, there's a lot of stuff that you didn't see at the time, and we'll get to the Tommy Dreamer comment at the very end, but I wonder if that played a little bit too, is the bar owner is a wrestling fan. He knows what ECW is, and he's like, all right, they're going to hit each other with some chairs and some tables and cool, you know, not going to get too wild here. And then all of a sudden they bring out the light tubes, the barbed wire, and maybe the bar owner kind of said, hey, I don't want to really be associated with this. So we're speculating, obviously, but there could be multiple reasons why Wednesday Night Wars didn't pick up until Tony Khan tried to use the term about 3 years ago versus NXT.
Yeah, I mean, that very well could be the case. Again, we're just speculating here. But, you know, if that's the case, that could have been a two-handed thing where it's like, yeah, hey, well, I didn't know you were going to do all that. And, you know, Xander could probably turn around at that point and be like, we're not coming the fuck over to Delaware if we can't do that, because we could not do that in Jersey.
Closer and at a bar there, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, their home base at the moment was Sewell, so they didn't really have a lot of reason to go into a bar in Delaware if it didn't open the rules up, possibly spread the fan base a little bit, you know, and give them a little bit wider of a range of what they could do as opposed to Jersey. So, I don't know, but... So we start off this show where we get a little outside promo segment from the Hate Club. And, well, most of it, it's Wifebeater and Big Mac Smack. The one comment I really liked in this is when he said, you know, he thinks he's got the Wifebeater's number. He can never have the Wifebeater's number. If he did, I'd go to the phone company and have it changed. I thought that was a great line. And it gave a little bit, like I said, Mac Smack isn't always on. I'm not saying he was gold throughout the entire run. But I felt like he played a really good role as Wifebeater's stepbrother. And this was one of those comments that I thought were just right on.
Is it stepbrother or brother-in-law? I forget what it is. Is it
stepbrother? Yeah, I think, yeah. Brother-in-law.
Oh, gotcha. So it, you know, starts out with the Radio Shack and Wifebeater out there. And I love the old Lincoln or whatever car that was with the broken door. Takes me back to, you know, that time frame. You know, that was something that was a legitimate thing, right? You had the friend with the car with the, you know, I got to hold on, bro. I got to get out and let you out or whatever. And you know, them coming out to the same side, you know, did make me laugh and put me in that time frame again. The cross colors jacket reference as well at the end. And then, yeah, the comment or the little piece there about I'll go to the phone company and change his number was absolutely a great way to go about, yeah, you think you got his number. But so I thought this was really, really good. I'm enjoying this setting stuff up beforehand, making it look real. And, you know, you're getting the guys on their way in. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. Yeah, so I like this too. You know, they went into the commentary, you know, back and forth, kind of setting the show up again. And then they went into the first match, which was Jeff Rocker versus Eddie Valentine. Now, the first thing I notice as Rocker walks out is he forgets he's a Rebel guy already, which I guess, you know, Rebel's not there. They're playing off he's banned from Delaware and this and this. But regardless of the case, like, one of your security guys has a Rebel shirt on, but this guy walks out without the Rebel shirt because, like, you know, what does that matter? I mean, you just started this thing. You know, it takes a T-shirt to continue with this angle. You have to do nothing else but walk out with the T-shirt on.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, we've already seen where they don't do a good job with consistency. And it's not even the people that aren't there. It's even some of the stuff in the ring or some of the stories they're trying to tell from week to week definitely jump around all over the place. So we'll see if next week when they're back in Suo, if he comes out with the Rebel shirt and, you know, I can't even make anything up for it. It's just poor continuity and attention to detail.
Yeah, spoiler alert, he will. So, again, another Froggy show where we just forget all of our angles, storylines, and everything and just go like, yeah, there is whatever, you know. We'll just do that. And the commentary will do their best to remind everybody of what you were doing because you're not going to do any of that tonight.
Yeah, if it wasn't for the commentary, right, you being live, and I know you weren't at this show, but being live, some of that stuff must be hard to keep you know, an eye on if you weren't going back and buying the DVDs, as you said, and listening or watching again, because the commentators have to tie a lot of stuff together in this early five shows, because if they don't tie it together, you're kind of sitting there not understanding a lot of the storyline. So, you know, the commentators are gold here to make it consistent.
Yeah, for sure they are. I think they do add more of an asset on the watch here. Just because back then, I mean, that's where it was beneficial to be there live because everyone was just kind of always standing around, you know, in your intermissions and your after shows and just kind of hanging with the fans. So it was pretty easy to ask this person or that person, hey, what the fuck was that about? You know, and then they'd be like, oh, yeah, we're trying to push this thing with the thing. And then everything they did forward would make sense even if they put, like, a little effort out because it was like, oh, yeah, he told me that was the thing. You know, so it was easier because you went right to the source and went, what was that?
Right. Yeah, and then watching on the DVDs, if it wasn't for them tying together, you don't really have access. You know, not to be morbid, you don't have access to a lot of the folks on these shows anymore at all. So never mind even trying to go back and post-date, you know, what was going on here. If you had any ability to contact folks, as like you said last week, you were able to get some more context from Ruckus. But you know, some of these folks you obviously can't get that feedback from or those storylines or input from any longer.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, get into this match a little bit because to me it was just a nothing match that went way too long. There were moments where Eddie was a little better than usual towards the beginning, but it turned into just kind of what it was. I never liked Jeff Rocker. He just breathes through his mouth and takes steroids, and I got nothing for him. But I never did, so it's not like a new opinion.
Yeah, so for me, you know, I'm at the point with Fast Eddie where, as I said last episode, I'm just watching to see where he's going to fuck it up. And, you know, here, to your point, the very, very beginning, okay, it's fine. And then, but less than a minute into the match, he Fast Eddie's right away. Why the fuck does he try to do things that he can't do? So we have a Hurricane Fuck Eddie to start the match in the corner. It's ugly. It's sloppy. I don't know if he was supposed to sit up and then get powerbombed by Rocker as like the power move and then just couldn't couldn't sit up, so he pulled with his legs and
yeah.
Rocker
you know,
went over.
I saw that one you're talking about, and I was a little unsure on whether that was going to be Rocker's fuck up, because if it was a head scissor or Hurricane Rana, Rocker should have went over a whole lot sooner. And then at that point, that's kind of Rocker's bad. You know, we're used to Eddie messing some things up, but, you know, it's hard to tell on that. Was that supposed to be countered into a power bomb? It didn't work out. He slipped off. It was hard to say, but again, yeah, it looked like trash, so.
Yeah, my only thing, I watched it back like three times. It does look like Eddie starts to try to sit up, and it might have been just I can't get up. My sit-up game is not good enough to sit up from a laying upside-down spot, because that's not a normal sit-up, obviously. That's a lot more strength needed to get back up in the air. And, it does look like he starts that, and maybe, like I said, if they go into the match and hey, if I can't get up, I'm just going to kind of pull my legs forward and you go with it. So I don't know where it was, but it was another fast Eddie being involved in a terrible-looking spot quick into the match. You know, my question that I wrote down is, you know, why does this guy keep getting booked? Is he the supply guy for the Colombian marching powder? You know, is his sister a ring rat? You know, what is going on that this guy is on every damn show?
I don't know. I really don't know for sure. Again, you know, I point back to where you will see, you know, over time, Dahmer really takes a liking to someone. Usually they're his students. And he'll just kind of attach himself to them. You know, he just has lots of opening matches with them, has lots of just interaction, and he tagged with this guy for a long time. So to me, I don't know if this was like another one of his projects, just like, dude, I'm going to do everything I can to make this work, even though all signs are not, it's not working. And like I said,
yeah,
he got to be average. But it was with Dahmer, you know, as their tag team moves got better, and they were teamed up against these monster teams that, you know, was making everyone look better.
Yeah, so Rocker to me is fine, and I agree. I don't know who the botch really was on there, right? But I'm blaming Fast Eddie until he proves me different. You know, I'm just
right.
going to go with the odds here.
You
know, Rocker was fine, but... You know how they say this guy is so good he can work with a broomstick, and I'm not saying that about Rocker, right? It would
right.
be easier for people to work with a broomstick because they're not trying to do shit they just can't do like Fast Eddie does. So to me, like, you know, working with a broomstick for Kenny Omega or, you know, the Bret Harts, the Ric Flairs, all the folks that they say that about is probably easier than getting in the ring with this guy because he tries to do shit he thinks he can do. Go back all the way to episode one when he tries to dive over the ropes and misses by 5 feet left. He tries to get up on the top rope and almost bobbles off and ruins a brilliant spot from the show last week. And now here we are again.
Sure.
And then Fast Eddie with the three sloppy forearms and then into a discus forearm. You know, the discus forearm, I actually stood up and mimicked it myself. He steps three times to go around in a full circle. That's not a discus forearm. That's a bad dance move on a Wednesday night in a bar in Dover. It's like, you know, why are we trying these? And you have Nick Gage coming out later that's going to do, you know, that uses the discus forearm or discus elbow, whatever you want to call it. And he does a great job with it. So why would you say, let me put this into my match and then step three times around
well,
to get there?
Maybe that's a favor to Gage, where it's just like, wait until they see years later. I'm going to do the shittiest one they've ever seen early on the card. That'll be like a subliminal thing. It'll stay in their mind. Later on, just hit it like you always do, man. They're going to pop like you fucking never before.
Hopefully, because it was ugly. And you know, I wrote here, and this is real, and it's not me admitting to or saying I beat up my kids. But, you know, I would... You know, my forearms to my kids as we played in the living room at, you know, 7 years old or whatever when we did the wrestling in the living room that all dads do, you know, look better and look less fake than this forearm set did from Fake Eddie or Fast Eddie.
Fake Eddie.
My favorite part of the match is when Eddie gets launched into the first row. So I enjoyed that just because it was Eddie getting launched into the first row and you can't really screw that up. You just kind of have to go and land, and that's what he did. And then, you know, pretty much the match is over, right? Rocker wins better than last time, you know, to start the show. But again, we said it before, anything could have been better than this Disaster in Delaware or whatever that show was called, because that's what it should have been named.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, a quick thing, and I'll let you take it where you want to take it, Jay, right? So I did notice there was two comments about a company or something called WrestleTech that came out in this match. So I don't know if you have any insights or what, but there was definitely two pretty strong comments, I guess, or comments that at least came out that made me say, what the hell is WrestleTech and why do they keep mentioning them in this match?
Yeah, I don't have a lot of knowledge of WrestleTech or anything like that. From what I went back and listened to, it sounded like kind of a shot at a rival trainer slash company, like a wrestling school slash company. Now, there could have been rumors and stuff, too, and then I guess Rocker had training in that facility, so I think just the tie was like, oh, yeah, and there was like a whole, you know, undertone there. It was another situation I was thinking about, and again, like, we can get into that any time, but I don't want to derail the show and, you know, just head in that direction, because it's going to be a little hard to recover from. So if you want to get back at the end, we can do that, but I don't want to, like, just wedge this information into random shows, because really the stuff that I'm talking about didn't even come out until well after their entire CZW run happened. So, you know, again, we're back in 2001. Let's do our best to stay there, at least in the moment, and then we'll hop into this next match.
Absolutely. That's what you call a teaser, folks. Kashmar and Z-Bar
yeah.
are up next.
Yeah, so this was, you know, some more Trent stuff. The next two matches are just like Trent Acid tease fest. He brings out here like he's going to wrestle, really hypes it up. He's telling him, you and me, he's in the ring, and then he just rolls through and says, no, actually, you're gonna wrestle him. So then he's got to wrestle Bar. At some point, I noticed a, you know, real nice fisherman's neck breaker off the knee from Kashmir. I know at the end of this match, Gargiulo was furious. So, the commentary, selling the severity of these screw jobs and these sideways tactics out of the big deals and really, you know, selling it. I mean, that's the best word to possibly, you know, encapsulate that. But go ahead, man, with this match.
Yeah, so, you know, we've been putting the commentators over a lot. There was a little bit of a mix-up at the beginning because it sounded like the ring announcer and the commentators knew that Z-Bar was going to be the one wrestling, but then, Ashley comes into the ring and everybody's a little bit confused that's holding a microphone at the time. Mm-hmm. But they recover well and it gets to the Z-Bar piece, so I think there was just a little bit that maybe was talked about early and then in the back, as the Rocker match was going on, maybe some things changed up a little bit to make it a little bit more entertaining, but the message never got over to the ring announcer and or commentators because they definitely started up saying this is Z-Bar versus Kashmir. And then, you know, Ashley gets in the ring, like you said, spends about a minute teasing that they're going to wrestle and then rolls out and then Z-Bar. So, you know, a little bit muddied up there, but again, the commentators do a good job of you know, pulling it out, pulling the nose up, as they say, and moving on it. The chair shot, the one for me that I called out besides the spot that you had, is the chair shot to Kashmir's ribs as he was in that, I think they called it an Oriental Scorpion, which I've never heard that move called before, but he had a, you know, he was stretching Z-Bar, and he was on top with the stretch, and Acid comes with a chair shot again to those exposed ribs midsection and whatnot. I thought that was a really nasty-looking chair shot that I'm sure that Kashmir was feeling throughout the rest of the match.
Yeah, what else is cool about that spot is that you'll learn later that part of the dream sequence, which is a sequence that a three-move sequence that the backseats do, is that right there, and usually Trent hits a drop kick on the guy while Johnny's got that on him. So So, you know, while he's got that going, he hits him in the ribs with it. So now it's, you know what I mean? It's part of something that they had together as the backseats, as a tag team, but it turns out to be Johnny's weakness in the, you know, moment where Trent's there and he's got the submission on.
Yeah, it becomes like, yeah, I know this is, yeah, I get what you're saying. I know this is going to be a spot where I can get to you, and using that knowledge of being the tag team, he's able to, I don't want to say counter it, but he knows exactly what to do to stop the move from happening.
Yeah.
So as it's cheating all match, right, that's the theme of the match. Every chance he gets, he's pulling the leg, he's, you know, getting, distracting the referee, whatever it is. Z-Bar, the superstar, is holding his own in the ring. I like this guy overall. I think he's good on the mic. I think he's good on commentary. I think he's good as the flunky, and now I think he's solid in the ring. There was nothing here that didn't look in place. And again, you know, book this guy. Stop booking Fast Eddie. Acid comes with the powder. My only kind of complaint with the powder is we're using it a lot, show after show after show. The powder is definitely the spot to go to, but it works here. You know, Acid hits him with the powder, and Z-Bar, you know, gets the win. You know, to me, Z-Bar, let's put him in the championship picture. I'm all in on Z-Bar.
That's crazy. There's very few people that would have agreed with you over time. He would be delighted to hear these sentiments. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. But you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, he would be overjoyed by your words.
Yeah, he does it for me. He has all the little small things. I like him. Sad to hear that he's not with us, but you know, up there to you or wherever the hell you are nowadays. You know, good stuff so far. You know, maybe that changes. Maybe the demons get to him and you start to see it change in the ring, whatever. But right now, you know, I'm a Z-Bar fan.
I mean, you know, as far as the heel goes, and, you know, as far as the heel goes, I can say that he was as over as you can be. I remember one time he went down to IWA Mid-South with Ian Rotten down there and everything. And, the fans had gotten so against him that they all, like, as like a kind of like a rib, agreed to turn their backs as he walked out and stayed with their backs during the entire fucking match. Like, there have been some pretty heavy heel heat responses to his presence. So, yeah, I mean, you could take it as being over. You definitely can if you're going to be a heel.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you want to do, right? You want to get the man and get him pissed off, and I think he does a great job at that. He does it with the smile, and I think that, or smirk, I should say, and I think that's a part of it, right? Everything he does has a big smirk, and it's all the little things to twist you as you're sitting there watching it. So I'm a fan because I'm a fan of heels, Jay, as you know, and yep. I'm all in on this heel work.
All right.
And then Cashmere cuts the baby face super promo, you know, I'm doing it for the fans, and that's how we leave this match. You know, Cashmere's moving his storyline forward with now, you know, I'm the super baby face, or, you know, I guess you can never really have a true white meat baby face in CZW, but he's trying to be the equivalent of that, where, you know, he's just here to do it for the fans and to get these dastardly bad guys and, you know, Give them what's coming to them.
Yeah. Yeah, so next up we got Trent Acid, Nick Burke, and Reckless Youth in a three-way. Trent has a five-minute bye to start the match to, again, just this is a continuance of our just the big deals torturing all staff in CZW minus the big deals. Gives Trent a five. I don't know if I've ever heard that, just random, like, you know, heel work. 5 minute bye for you in the three-way dance, and then you come in afterwards.
Yeah, first time I've heard it, and I like it. One of the things that also, again, being a heel and, you know, really annoying the crowd, I love the fact that, you know, Trent Acid, and I love it because I love the music, but I'm loving that he makes sure to come out to the Midnight Acid music theme, you know, every time. Like, he was just there. There was no reason to go back to the back to play the music and make him wait on you coming out again. And I thought that was just, a nice little touch of, first off, Z-Bar is going to come out to the same music. We're going to win the match, hit the same music. We're going to go to the back. We're going to hit the same music, right? So it's just like, again, just small little things that would annoy the shit out of somebody in the crowd if you're not a fan of this guy, or, you know, you're playing, you know, you like the good guys. So anything that the heels do to annoy you, this would be another thing that'd be like, oh, Jesus, this guy's music again, right? And I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, he does a great job.
This match here, for me, right, to get into it a little bit, right, like you said, Ashley gets the five-minute bye. Burke and Youth, they have a good little, you know, I don't think it's a full 5 minutes, but a good little back and forth. You know, nothing special, nothing bad. It's just a good little 5 minutes to get going. The one thing that I did notice, though, is Burke and Youth dress alike. And while you can see clearly who's who with their in their face, I had a tough time of knowing who is who sometimes on some of the quick moves where, you know, guys were talking about something that was taped on VHS in 2001. You ever, you know, you go back and you even look at the sports with, you know, the best cameras in the world at the time, throw on a basketball game from 2001 and you'll see that it's not always easy to exactly say, it's definitely not high definition, let's put it that way. So those two guys wearing the same outfit threw me a couple of times, or very close to the same outfit, right? The blue and black threw me a couple times. But, you know, again, this is independent wrestling. So these guys don't have five or six sets of gear with them. So you can say, oh, I'm wearing blue and black tonight. You know, can you flip over to the red and green, whatever the hell it is, right? Like, they're going to wear what they have. But that did stand out to me as making it a little difficult to see who is working with who. And then Acid, when he does come in, he absolutely destroys Burke with a lariat to get himself into the match. One of the things here, Jay, you know, learning Trent Acid and learning his work, this was the match where I think he was really laying it in a lot more than the other stuff. The commentators made mention of that too, but I had it written down on my sheet here, maybe about a minute before the commentators made mention of the kicks. You know, I hope he stays in this a little bit more, because early on, I don't think there was anything wrong, but there were, you know, a little less than stellar punches and clotheslines, where tonight everything is super snug and, you know, everything looks like it hurt, because, again, that old saying, because it probably did. And I thought this was really – really a good job by Acid of turning up the intensity. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's got to work that balance over time, because his main objective is to irritate the fans, to irritate, well, you know, quote unquote, irritate his opponent and frustrate everybody into, like, why won't this guy just have the match? And as I always said, you know, when he does turn it on, he can go. So you can get as mad and yell pussy and, you know, coward and whatever you want to yell, because he's doing this chicken shit heel stuff. But when he decides to turn it up, he can absolutely go. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure over time it became, you know, pretty tough for him to find that balance between, you know, that switch that he throws on to full on go, and then where he completely hits the brakes on so many of his opportunities to show you, like, yeah, no, I could take that away from you too.
Yeah, this was the first time that I seen, you know, what you were saying, where he can really go. There's 2 minutes of really, really strong scramble work in this match, right? Where they're just, you know, it's spot after spot after spot, and it's, you know, it's that scramble style, but it's really, really strong here. And it also pulled out that thing we were talking about last episode, where they're clearly, you know, choreographed, but it doesn't look like it. And it's all based on how the person taking the move is, right? I went back and I really started to look and say, why does this look so much better to me than, again, the commander and other guy, the comment or whatever his name is, hologram, that's it. You know, why does this look so much better? And it's really the guy taking the moves. And that's what really stood out here, is they didn't look like they were setting it up so that the person can, you know, again, in that commander stuff, it looks like, okay, it's a it's a school play and I got to be on this X, right? And the teacher puts a little blue X with the painter's tape down. That's what that looked like. Mm. Where this looked like, no, we know what we're going to do, but we're just going to do it wherever it happens. You don't have to be in the perfect spot. We're going to make it work. And I thought this was just a fantastic 2 minutes of scramble work.
Yeah. Yep.
They finish up with the three-way German suplex, and then we have the sunset flip combo, which was really, really cool, but also really dangerous because of that pony ring, like we were talking about the last time they were in Dover. The ring seems a little bit smaller, so Acid just misses, you know, hitting his neck on that bottom rope. And then we get the near fall there. Acid has Burke on the shoulders to a bulldog off the top by Youth. You know, Acid almost gets spiked, or Acid's on Burke's shoulders. Acid almost gets spiked head first here. So that was a little bit of a scary move. It looks like Burke maybe didn't release early enough, and Acid goes straight down. And then Acid gets the win with the old heel tactic of putting the leverage with his feet on the bottom rope. And, it's a good solid match overall. There's nothing, you know, again, nothing bad in this match at all. There's nothing that is gimmicky or fake. Just good solid work all the way through. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I thought it was a good match. It wasn't anything that was, you know, mind-blowing to me, but the entire point of this match was more of selling Acid, selling what he's up to, his heel tactics, how sneaky he is. No matter what you think you got him in, he's going to find a way around it. And that was the entire point of this match, and it got its point across to me.
Yeah, and it is, you know, again, it's a Wednesday show. It's, you know... you know, it's not a huge crowd. It's a good crowd, but not a huge crowd. So I think they did exactly what they needed to do. They moved the storylines through. You know, you could put Burke versus Acid, Burke versus Youth, and, you know, all the different combinations there. And I'll be interested to watch, you know, next show if they stay with it. So I think it did exactly what it was supposed to do.
Yes. Yeah. So then the next match, we got Dahmer versus Lobo for the Iron Man title. So this whole thing kind of kicks off with the theme of Dahmer's trying to bring the Iron Man title back to a wrestling title. He believes it's supposed to be 60-man Iron Man limit, you know, like the Iron Man matches, and that's what it's supposed to be. And he trained Lobo, so he's offended by this whole thing. So that's going to be the theme of this match here.
Yeah, he comes out, cuts that exact promo. I think it sets it up nice. And then, you know, I'm just going to read it kind of the way I wrote it. Starts out with wrestling. You know, starts out with wrestling, right? Dahmer gets compared by the announcers to Arn Anderson, then hits a nice spine buster. It made me laugh because I think I made that reference about him a couple weeks ago that I wasn't ready to call him an Anderson yet, but I could see where he's getting his inspiration from, definitely that Arn Anderson style. You know, I like that. I like that style. Arn was one of my guys. You know, then Lobo has the nice DVD. Dahmer gets his foot on the rope. You know, again, all wrestling so far. So I'm expecting the turn, right? I'm expecting the Lobo chair shot, the Lobo whatever it's going to be. And then, you know, it just stays wrestling. And, you know, the way that they finished this match, I thought was great. So Dahmer's got him in a wrestling hold, and Lobo kind of, you know, reverses it, turns it. He's got him in like a choke sleeper type move. And, you know, Lobo's able to get his body weight on top of Dahmer for the 1-2-3, and it's the surprise finish. And they did anything you know, the story was, can he beat him without doing other stuff than the wrestling? And Lobo's able to pull out the match with the all wrestling moves. It's a good story. The student beats the teacher. You know, just a classic wrestling match, classic wrestling story. And once again, nothing here out of place, nothing here that's bad. This card starting out very good for me, especially, you know, with the expectations I had going back to Froggy's Bar and Grill.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this match was one that I always kind of remembered. It always kind of stuck in my mind, especially that line that he gave him down the end where he told him, yeah, you know, I let you off easy this time. The next time you get in my ring, you're going to bleed like a pig. You know, and that, like, I was like, man, you know, Lobo's trying to make a point in this and that. So on one end, I think, you know, that was historic and just the way that it stuck with me all these years. And because as soon as I saw it on paper, I knew that he was going to tell him that there in the match. That was the thing. And he was going to stick wrestling and all that. But on the other side, I know the history. And I know that this could have been fucking awesome. It could have took that turn, like you said. They weren't really, I don't even know how much of it was them as much as Dahmer. But they never really wanted to push Dahmer. And Dahmer didn't really want to be pushed. So they never really got him into the picture where you would get these monster suplexes against the bump machine that you know, is just matching these two styles and getting the best out of this match that you can get. We never really got that. So to me, like, to see these two do this was great at the time and still great in retrospect, but then you go, man, 2 months later, that would have been great to say, hey, by the way, I don't like the way you talk to me that time, you know. Let's bring whatever blood or whatever you got, and let's see if, you know, he wasn't in the picture for that Iron Man title at all. So it's just disappointing in the long run, but, yeah, it made complete sense on why they did it.
Yeah, and see, I thought that's where we were going. I thought we were going to get that kind of blow-off, and I thought it was going to be the old-school kind of blow-off, right? Dahmer loses here kind of in a, you know, man, how'd you beat me type of way. Maybe next time we get Dahmer beating Lobo that way for a title switch, right, where it's, oh, man, how did that possibly happen? And then we get the blow-off of, you know, the all-in Iron Man type match, and that's where I thought they were going. So a little disappointed for the spoiler there that's not where they're going, because that's what I really thought was happening here was exactly that, right, a sneaky finish or a lucky finish right into another lucky finish, and now we got to set it up. So, you know, in the obviously we're not going to use it, but like now we need to put him in a steel cage because we can't have this or whatever, right? However they get to those type of things. And that's where I really thought this story was going. So we'll see how they kind of, what they do, if anything. But it sounds like I'm going to be disappointed that they don't continue this in the next couple shows.
Yeah. So then we got Blade and Ruckus versus the Briscoes. Some cool stuff here. You know, you got Ruckus with that spinning face buster, that sit-out face buster he does. That's pretty innovative stuff. The double moonsaults off the half wall. They did that, like, snap cradle suplex combo that Blade pulled off. I thought that was pretty nice. And we got a Blade bomb off the ropes.
Yeah, so, you know, this was good. I'll call out the commentary made a reference to the Briscoes being from Oklahoma, so I don't know if they're trying to tie them in, like they're in relation with the other Briscoes, the older Jerry and Jack. You know, and again, you're going to see that stuff in independent wrestling where a comment's made and maybe, you know, when they get their back and say, hey, this is what I started putting over, you know, maybe the Briscoes are like, no, we don't want to be those guys, or I don't know what's happening here, but definitely caught my attention that they said, you know, oh, you just don't like them because they're from Oklahoma when they're getting announced from Dover.
Because, yeah, weird because, you know, when they're in Delaware, the least you could do is make them the hometown guys, right? Like,
yeah.
We'll put them in the place that you've never, ever wrestled the CZW show in. We'll do that.
So I thought it was interesting, but, you know, again, knowing the wrestling history a little bit, obviously that's a reference to the other Briscoes because, you know, the Native American and the Oklahoma history there, you know, from way back when. So we have great back and forth mat wrestling and really good double teamwork to start here. Dewey interferes. We're on the outside where we have the duck ceiling fans to come off the top rope to the outside. We got a brainbuster onto the chairs, and what looks to me here is this is the first time, even counting the ECW stuff, that we're really doing different things with chairs and chair pyramids and chairs this and chairs that. So every time I've noticed that chairs are getting set up, it almost looks like they're learning what's the best way to make it look as bad as possible, but not actually hurt you, because this brainbuster through the chairs is with, you know, the back of it where your head would go, your neck and back would go, is the back of the chair. So, you know, this one, again, looks scary as they were coming down, but they're able to pull it off. And I'm just left wondering, you know, is this just, you know, let's see what the best way to set up a chair is, or multiple chairs to make moves.
Yeah, I think it's more CZW's unpredictability. And, you know, like I said before, they just did the best work with chairs that you could ever, any company could ever boast. Because they did so much with building this thing and putting this together and using the other side of the chair. It had become very predictable over time. You know, you set up a chair like you would sit on it, drop toe hold into it. That's the majority of the chair spots you saw. Or swinging it, or, you know, I mean, that was just, or, you know, wedge it in between the ropes and Irish whip them into it. It's just, yep. It became the same stuff over and over, and CZW is like, no, we're breaking the mold completely with the chairs.
Yeah, and they absolutely do. Last week we talked about the, you know, acid going through the chairs, and both of the backs are together, right? So he lands on the tops of the chairs versus the seats of the chairs. And then here, like I said, you know, we have one facing in, the other one facing to the side, right? So it's just, again, a different way that makes it look more impactful. And then I had the same thing, right? That handspring of Ruckus's is definitely over. Gets the biggest, you know, spot pop of the night so far is just, not just because I can't do it, but him hitting that handspring, cartwheel handspring elbow into the corner gets a really solid pop from the crowd. As you said, we get the dual moonsaults off the half wall. Briscoe's win. They shake hands with Ruckus and Blade, and Dewey's pissed about this. So we're starting to tease that, or not even starting, we're teasing that every week, that one of the two are going to be pissed at the end of the match. It's either going to be Dewey or the Briscoes, and it's for different reasons, right? The Briscoes don't like when Dewey interferes. Now Dewey doesn't like when the Briscoes are baby facing it up and shaking the hands of their opponents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And hopefully we get a payoff on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we're going forth to the Hate Clubs, pretty much. They're not the Hate Club yet, but Nick Gage and Nate Hatred are up against the actual Hate Club for the tag team titles. And this was pretty fun, violent. You saw a lot of Gage and Payne action, which is great. Always, I mean, that's always been a great chemistry, obviously. But you'll notice also early on, they kept that out of the kayfabe. You know, they didn't mention that on commentary. They'd say Justice Payne was from Yonkers and Gage was from, you know, National Park, or he's from Philly or from wherever. And there was always just like this separation of who these two people were. But when they got in the ring, you saw the chemistry. So it'd be a while before they actually mentioned them being brothers and actually sold that. During the match, you see Gage break Froggy's wall on an Irish whip for no fucking reason. I don't know if you caught that, but that little half wall caught Gage's head into it, and he's got a good dent. I had to rewind it to see, like, did he break that wall just now? So maybe that went into the Froggy's debacle as well.
That's what I was just going to say. I did see that, and when I was talking earlier, I didn't bring it in there, but that could have been a thing too, right? Don't break my place. And you guys broke my place. That was the one rule we had.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's one thing in the match, but this guy's also got to run his bar on Thursday night and Friday night. So you're coming in and you see a big hole in the wall. I wouldn't call this a fine establishment, but at the same time, it was a decent looking bar. So, you know, again, that may play into it, because now he has to get it, either pay to get it fixed, or, you know, explain off on that next Thursday, Friday, Saturday of why there's a big hole in my wall. And, you know, might get a little old to telling them, oh, well, you got to understand we have wrestling here.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not going to help the patrons, you know, when they get super drunk and want to fight someone and look around and there's already damage to the building. That's just going to encourage things.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, on to the match here.
Yeah, so I got a couple questions, or a question that probably is going to break down a little bit for me. So the Hate Club is out first, but it's not the Hate Club. The other group's the Hate Club. So how does this Hate Club thing evolve? Maybe that won't take me too far forward, but, you know, Pain and Wifebeater are the Hate Club, but yet on the IWTV and, you know, even last week, I think, you know, they're starting to call Hatred Engage the Hate Club. So I'm a little confused, you know, on who the Hate Club is right now and were these guys all together at one point?
They weren't all together at one point, but there was a different version of the Hate Club in the distant future where it was Pain and Gage. This thing will kind of explain itself and take its turn to turn them into the Hate Club. But I think some of this stuff is just like these guys are a little premature with calling them that or, you know, later. And it's funny because, you know, if you went back now and you had to put all this stuff up on IWTV, you'd be like, oh, well, that's the Hate Club or, you know, but they weren't the fucking Hate Club yet. So it's not, you know, it's not even the right, you know, and I've done it so many times. Kind of on purpose, too, just because it's, you know, within context. They are eventually the Hate Club that we all know the most. So, but the original Hate Club was Wifebeater, Big Mac Smack, Justice Pain. They had Ed O'Mac, who was like another guy who was mostly a fan. He did some ring announcing in the future. They had just a lot of little extras. Justin Case was like another guy they had as like a security guy. This is back, you know, 99, 2000. So they had like a bigger whole squad. But that was the Hate Club of old, and it turned into Nick and Nate with Dewey as the manager. It wasn't a stable anymore. It was really just these two guys.
Gotcha. Yeah, and Hate Club's a great name, especially in a CZW-type environment, so I'm happy they kept with it, but again, coming back however many years later without any real knowledge of what's in the future, I was definitely confused on who the Hate Club was. And I definitely know that last show in Sewell that the announcers or commentators were calling Gage and Hatred the Hate Club at parts of it or one of the shows back, right? So that's where it got really confusing is they did make mention of it, and now, you know, I'm trying to write notes here, and I'm scratching out H8 a bunch of times because I'm like, fuck, that's not the right one this time. So, yeah, right. It does get a little bit confusing, but, you know, easy enough to kind of understand. Right now it's Pain and Wifebeater are the Hate Club, and Gage and Hatred are just a new tag team that's coming together, and we'll see how they explain it out in the future.
Yeah, so, they really never gave like a – they never gave, like, a stable name for Dewey's whole thing, which they really should have. They should have had a whole separate name for Dewey's whole stable at the time because it consisted of two tag teams. So you figure it was big enough to, you know, have its own mark. And then, of course, you know, we're creating the turmoil with the Briscoes kind of wanting to be faces and have sportsmanship. You know, so that's going to take its turn. But in the meantime, it was four guys and a manager. You should have had some kind of stable name instead of just leaning this Hate Club thing way earlier than the storyline even did.
Yeah, agreed. And you always had it, right? You always had those stables with a name. And to your point, this is the one that doesn't. And there's not a ton of there is some interaction, but there's not like a ton of interaction between the Briscoes and Gage and Hatred. You know, they'll come and they'll jump somebody for each other, but that's really the Briscoes or the Lackeys there. But yeah, so getting into this match, first time I see the tag team belts. I asked about it last week because they were kind of talking about it. I had no idea there was tag team champs. I really like the belts. I'm not like a belt guy or anything, but I thought those looked actually really, really good for an independent wrestling belt. So they come out, they got the belts on. I also like that. I like when, you know, the champions wear the belts. You work so hard to get it, you should, you know, take advantage of it. One of the things that I always hated on the bigger stuff is like The Rock, when he would toss the belt around, it drove me nuts. But here, you know, here they're wearing the belt, they're taking care of them, and I like that. We got a super fast start with fast brawling in the ring, which I also liked. We didn't immediately go outside, but we did have that brawling style in the ring. It was hard hitting. And it was interesting to me that Gage was the one that was trying to turn it into a wrestling match a couple times, and then either Whitebeater and or Justice Payne wouldn't allow him to turn it into the wrestling match. They wanted to keep it the brawling style. So, you know, for me, again, not knowing Nick Gage's history, it's starting to make me think he's the kind of in-ring worker out of this whole group versus the rest of them. Is that, you know, somewhat accurate?
To a certain extent. You know, that's the thing. It's so funny that, you know, with him becoming the guy that's deathmatch this and deathmatch that, CZW had its death matches, but it wasn't every show. And the matches that I was the most fond of Gage for were just hard-hitting tag matches, were just one-on-ones with some chairs and tables involved. That was my favorite Gage, was that guy that just fucked people up, and it wasn't about the glass all the time. I mean, he had legendary death matches, don't get me wrong, but, you know, those were the matches that I loved Gage so much for, because he was just flat-out aggressive. You didn't need to bring anything with you. And, I mean, his wrestling is always a part of what he was doing. He would have those exchanges with just about anybody in there. And when you saw him and his brother in there, you know, knowing that they're brothers, you could watch and you could see there's a little bit of rivalry in there where they're trying to one-up each other a bit.
Yeah, I have it here, right? Payne, you can see that the dropkick and the elbow, right, is hard hitting and it's full contact. They're definitely not afraid to lay it into each other, that's for sure, right? And Whitebeater has some really nice power slams early on as well. Payne and Gage go outside, and excuse my singing voice, but we're walking in Dover. You know, throw it to that Walking in Memphis song, because that's what we're doing now. We're just walking around the bar. It looks terrible. To your point, Gage does go through the wall at one point here, but we're just kind of strolling around until we get back into the ring. There's a chair shot. So we get the first terracotta flower pot that I've seen. So the terracotta flower pot's put on I believe it was Whitebeater's head. And then there's a leg drop, but then Gage comes in and chair shots the pot on Whitebeater's head. And I just said, fuck me, fuck this, fuck him, fuck everything. There's no way I'm doing that. Absolute blind chair shot to the back of the head with a flower pot on it. Nope. You know, he goes out. I don't know if it's, you know, if he's bleeding hard way. After a while, I realize it's not, because it's way too centered in the middle of his forehead. But Whitebeater comes up bloody, and I really didn't know at the beginning if that, you know, if it was the flower pot that got him or what happened there. But that was absolutely a crazy, crazy, crazy spot to me. What'd you think?
I always love the flower pot spot. I've only seen it, you know, a good handful of times, but it's always just, it looks awesome. It's one of those things that just has a great visual to it. You know, you can't wrap your head around how it's safe. It's probably safer than taking a blunt chair to the head, but it just looks fucking awesome.
Yeah, and that's, it did. It looked awesome here, and you know, I think not to release the magic, right? Obviously, you're hitting the bottom of that flower pot more than the top, but still, I trust people with some things. There's certain things that I would just say no, and it's anything that I can seriously wind up injured that I don't have any control of, and that's exactly what Whitebeater lets Gage do here. He has no control in this situation. He doesn't even know when the impact's coming, and just, keeping in the time frame and the time reference, that's a no for me, dog.
Yeah.
Payne has a great blockbuster. You know, every time he's done that move so far, he's hit it extremely smoothly, and it really looks good. And then Gage had the nice press slam into the fall away slam. Again, not knowing Gage's earlier work, I was really impressed with that move and the power, because, you know, same size guy, so you're not. It's not like you got a huge guy in here tossing around the cruiserweight, right? Same size guys, and this looked really, really nice. And again, you know, I'm like, okay, Gage can go in the ring. He can wrestle. He just happens to like beating the shit out of people more so than wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, that fallaway slam was always a staple of his. He always used that pretty often. So, and it was from the start one of the things that, impressed you right away. It was like,
okay, this guy could brawl, he could wrestle a little bit, this and that. He's super violent. He seems angry as fuck. And, oh, shit, look at this. You know, a couple of those moves that would just jump off the page and you go, oh, shit. He's, yeah, and that press slam to the fall away was always a dope move. I've seen him do it off the top, off of, you know, into stuff. It's a great move.
Yeah, and in his later stuff that, you know, I've admitted to you know, watching and understand, knowing from the GCW, he still has it in the arsenal, doesn't pull it out all the time, but it looks a little sloppier now, right? And, I mean, you know, obviously it's 20-some-odd years later, but, you know, when he pulls it out now, I think he pulled it out against Jeff Hardy in that match. It was, okay, yeah, he did it. You know, he got Hardy over, but it didn't look crisp in any way. This looked extremely crisp.
Yeah.
And then we have Zandig and Z-Bar, the superstar. They interfere. And this is what I said about the powder, right? So we go back to the powder here. Justice Payne gets the powder in his eyes. He can't see, and he hits Wife Beater with the Payne Thriller. So, you know, great here. I wish we didn't use it earlier in the night, right? It's one of those where, you know, one powder spot for me is enough. Powder is something in wrestling, and I'm fine with it, but one time in a night is enough for me, especially when you have another tag team possibly breaking up over it because we just lost the match because you couldn't see and you wound up slamming me.
Right.
So Gage comes off the top with the toad splash, and we have new champs.
Yep. Yeah, so this definitely helps us start the role of the eventual Hate Club. And, you know, brings the tag titles back into the scene. The year CZW keeps those tag titles pretty strong. They keep them relevant again, which, again, I think they just kind of landed on the wrong guys. You know, they're like, oh, we'll have this tag match. We'll put these guys over. And then they started working on the Iron Man title and the World title, which had both of those tag title guys in the picture. So it kind of just threw the tag titles to the back burner. And I think they realized that and corrected it when they – you know, brought these back here.
And I think that's a very common booking, I guess we'll say mistake, right? Where you see that throughout time in wrestling, where your tag guys get over, and now all of a sudden you want them to be, or they want to be too, single stars, because I don't think there's many folks that want to stay as tag teams. I think you have a few out there, but in general, most guys want to be the guy. And, you know, I think it happens a lot. I think you can call it out in both WCW, WWE, you know, even AEW now. They made a big deal about the Trios title for a little bit there, and I couldn't even remotely tell you what's going on with that nowadays because, again, they lost it in storyline because, you know, whoever had it at the time, it may have been a part of the Young Bucks thing in the Elite, but, you know, now all of a sudden they're working on other things and the title gets tossed to the side for a little bit. So completely understanding it's going to happen probably more on the indies than it is even in those. But, you know, it's always been a part of booking that obviously becomes hard because some of the best in the world have messed it up throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen it go multiple ways, you know, because you got – so like you said, you got – so say one of your two tag champions is really getting over. Now you want to put them over for a major title. Well, you either got to work in there where the other tag partner kind of down that he screws him out of the title and then they lose because, you know, you want to push this guy in a main title, but now you also have to throw a loss in there to get those off of him. So sometimes I think they just go, you know, when they're, let's just not have tag title matches for the next show or two. Let's just, you know, we'll come back to that later.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, again, them bringing them out and coming out and having the title change here, right? It all makes sense. I'm okay with the whole way this is happening. Zandig comes out. Imagine that he gets on the mic. He has the Destruction in Delaware or Dover shirt that we talked about. So we're not going to rehash that, but that's where all of that happens. Zandig cuts a promo running down ECW, including calling out Sandman. For using the gimmick barbed wire when he's in WCW right before it ends at this time. Vaguely remember him doing some barbed wire work there. So interesting, again, that we talked about, hey, Jay, is this gimmick barbed wire? And you're like, no, I don't think so. And now Zandig comes out, and I'm getting a little tired of these guys listening to our show 30 years later and kicks in what happened what happened back then. But it's becoming a little bit of a theme for us that we're kind of foreshadowing some things that are said, which is quite interesting to me.
Yeah, which is why, you know, in the back of my mind, I really didn't think the gimmick barbed wire was much of a thing for CZW, because they did really go out of their way to, like, scream at people that this is the real shit, motherfucker, not like those other, you know, and you're like, I vaguely remember them really pointing out that it was real. So although there could be shows where they made it a little safer, I just doubt it based on their aggression about it.
We get to see later. It is real, and we definitely get to see that later. Dreamer comes out, and we're on to the main event already. So, Dreamer comes out, main event, and what do you got?
Yeah, Zandig versus Tommy Dreamer, which, you know, as the big deals go, turns into a complete clusterfuck of just everything going on. We see our first experience, our first scene of Jun Kasai. And, I mean, he delivered like he always does. Mondo, I think Mondo showed up, right?
No Mondo here tonight. No, just Jun Kasai and then Z-Bar.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, because I knew there was somebody on the other side.
There was mention about Mondo not being able to make it, and maybe that's where you got thrown off. But the commentators did make mention of Mondo not being at this show and not being able to make it. So maybe at some point he was supposed to be involved, but yeah.
Yeah, I know it just turned into a whole clusterfuck, and they just started getting super violent. Wife Beater gets involved. That's the other player I had left out. But, you know, the Hate Club come in with tubes. Kasai's out there. It's a splash on the table that doesn't break, which, you know, definitely hurts more than if it does. I mean, the German on the Kasai's head on the tubes, that's mm-hmm. where, like, you get to know who you're dealing with. Because Jun Kasai is just on another level, and when you see what Payne hits him with that suplex, and he just lands on his head and just pops up, and you're like, all right, yeah, this is why they brought him in.
Absolutely. Just to run down the kind of match that I got real quick before we get into the finish. Dreamer's out. They're brawling around. Zandig up and over the barrel. We're on the outside. And this is where I start to see the difference between ECW and CZW, because Dreamer's looking like he's doing all his normal stuff. So, again, we're walking in Dover. We go outside. We got two moves, and we're back inside. Z-Bar interferes. But one of the things that I noticed is, you know, Dreamer's big move is the play to the audience, DDP into the chair. And while that was cool in ECW, and you're like, oh, that landing on that chair must hurt, It kind of turned into a wrist lock here, right? It has no real place anymore because they're doing so much more stuff that move is just like, oh, cool. I would have been just as cool with him doing a body slam at that point because it wound up being about the same thing. And that's what happens when you're trying to one-up each other all the time. You know, those moves that were devastating, you know, even just 3 years earlier are now like, that looked kind of shitty. And then Jun Kasai comes out, and there's a reference made to CZW Japan. Was this just the commentators commentating, or is there a real thing that was happening on the other side of the globe?
No, as I told you, you know, and we've seen Zandig disappearing and coming back and disappearing, and every time he's gone, they're saying, oh, the boss is in Japan. So he was. I mean, CZW was taking tours of Japan. They would bring a handful of guys with them. So Zandig, you know, brought Ruckus over there. He brought Trent over there. He brought Kashmir. He brought Gage. I mean, all of these guys, you know, that he believed in had these Japan tours because he'd attach him to, like, you're booking me and you're booking a couple of my guys. And he was bringing these young guys in there and had early tours of Japan because of that. So a lot of times when it came down to it, you know, if he brought Wifebeater and Gage and Acid, well, he didn't have a whole lot that went with his old storyline. So they kind of had the role with how Japan wanted to book them. So, again, that was when he said, you know, Wifebeater left him for dead in the ring in CZW Japan. Because, yeah, like,
on the state side, they don't give a shit about each other. So they had to coexist in these Japan wars when, you know, there's the back story of they're not really cool in their home fed.
Right. So, but I guess my question's a little bit more of, so was he running the shows, or was this like Big Japan or whatever?
Yeah.
And it's just a faction.
Yeah, Big Japan in collaboration with CZW. So it wasn't actual CZW shows over there so much as it was Big Japan versus CZW, the angle. And he would bring over his guys, and then guys would come over here, as you're seeing Jun Kasai now. Minoru Fujita will be coming up soon. So, you know, we'll be getting guys in from Japan when they're getting guys from us as well.
Okay, yeah, and that's where I was going with it, because he did, you know, the commentators did say Jun Kasai from CZW Japan, and I'm like, wait, is there like a promotion over there? How is this working? But that makes more sense. So it's a, you know, it's kind of like you see today.
Uh-huh. So then also with Kasai, they made him part of Team CZW, even though he's obviously Team Japan. You know, like just within their angle that they built, CZW didn't have enough guys on their side, so they made Jun Kasai one of those, so that way when he traveled back over stateside, he already had an angle, and it, I guess it was part of their agreement.
Got it. Makes sense. So Kasai is in the ring, Dreamer up on the table. Kasai comes with the splash. The table wins. Zandig then props the table up in the corner. Dreamer through the table, and now all hell breaks loose, right? Payne and Beater come out with light tubes, and Tommy Dreamer exits stage right. So I'm really fascinated if there was a way to go and find out, you know, what happened here. Did Dreamer not know how violent or, you know, ultra-violent this was going to get compared to Extreme, or was this the whole kind of thing so that Dreamer can put it over at the end? But I really felt, and if it wasn't the case, Dreamer did a great job. I really felt like, you know, Tommy Dreamer was on the outside and, you know, a couple times had two camera shots of him where, it looked to me like he was like, no, hold on. I knew you said there was going to be some interference here, but I'm good. I'm not getting into that. Kasai gets wrapped up in the barbed wire. There's multiple chair spots here. Zandig, the same thing. And you can see the barbed wire is in Kasai's back. You know, he has no shirt on. He's shredded, but you can also see where the barbs are through his skin after the chair shots.
Uh-huh.
And then we have the slam on the spoil of the barbed wire, which again, there's no give there at all, right? So Kasai takes that. Payne gets on the mic and calls out the Hate Club. So again, I'm still confused on the Hate Club piece. And then Dreamer gets on the microphone and completely puts over CZW. And he seems like he wants nothing to do with this, because even after he puts over CZW, he's like, all right, and to the fans, I just want to say thank you. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for supporting us. Drive home safe. And he's like, I'm out of here. Like, I don't want my name attached to this. This is not what I was expecting. So, you know, I don't know if you have any insight, you know, or heard any interviews, but to me it looked like Dreamer was not ready for what happened. And really wanted to, one, didn't want to take any part of it, and two, you know, kind of wanted to disassociate himself a little bit with it.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of the vibe on the fan base side when this happened. And I would, another thing that I would never forget from this show was that was such an indictment. It was such a just moment for CZW, for Tommy Dreamer to come out. And, I mean, the innovator of violence, I mean, the face of ECW for a good amount of time, to come out and just say, you are more hardcore than I've ever been in my life. Fucking holy shit, you know, like, this is different. This is another level. And, you know, that was, you know, because, you know, when they're doing everything they were doing, of course there's criticism out there. You're just trying to do ECW. You're just a knockoff ECW. Oh, look at this fake ECW over here. You know, you have that, and it doesn't help when you're using ECW talent. So, man, when one of those guys comes in and their experience is like, holy shit, I didn't know it went like this. So anyway, then that puts ECW back on the pedestal that us fans had put it on, and it gives it so much more credibility, and
you know, justifies what we've been feeling as fans, that this shit is top-notch. Yeah, they weren't Raven. Yeah, they weren't Tommy Dreamer, Sabu, Rob Van Dam. All the guys you've heard of have been, you know, worldwide famous because of the status they came to. Some were more so because of their WWE runs. But, you know, it's hard to even have that comparison when you're CZW at the time. But that's how we felt. And Tommy Dreamer saying it was like, hey, guys, remember that? Remember that conversation we had about ECW and, you know, it really, it felt like a huge win on the fan base for us.
Yeah, you can, I mean, again, you never know if it's a work or if it's a shoot, and that's supposed to be, that is when you get the best stuff, and this is exactly it, because I don't know, but eyes were really telling me a story and really selling, hey, I didn't know we were coming to this, right? You said there was going to be interference, just roll with it, and I was all in on it, and then holy shit, what light tubes and you know, again, that's real Barton. No, I'm not in on that because he never gets back in the ring, right? He's on the outside the whole time, even when he cuts the promo. Like, hey, you guys are absolutely out of your minds. You're more you know, more extreme than ECW. And again, I'm gonna try to sell this to the crowd of, hey, get home safe, see ya. And he kind of just tosses the mic and he's gone.
Yeah, and he's like a foot from the ropes the entire time just watching. Like, he might as well hand him a camera because,
yep.
Like, he didn't separate himself very far. He was just standing there in awe.
Yeah. And then Zandig challenges Dreamer, Payne, and Wave Beater. And just to follow up for myself, and I know you'll do a great job of kind of doing it in a second, or not even in a second, but when we get to it, because I think I want to talk to you about some stuff that happened over this weekend already. Zandig challenges Dreamer, Payne, and Beater on Saturday, and I did click up to see, and Tommy does not come to the show. So not to throw the spoiler out there, but I did check to see, and that made it all the more real to me that Tommy was like, yeah, I'm good, guys. You do your thing over there. I don't think he doesn't support it, but I think he also is, to your point, has a little bit more of a worldwide name and is like, I want to see what this can take me, you know, what's going to happen in the WWE type stuff or whatnot. And also, I'm not down for what you guys are doing.
No. Yeah, for sure. There was no long-term plan for him to really be in some blood feud with someone, especially on his end. So he just opted out for sure.
So now we got, what is that, 3 in a row where we got an ECW guy that comes in and comes out, or is it 2? I know it's one more time, Jay.
It doesn't stop. You know, this is a consistent thing. And like I told you, this gets to the point of Cage of Death 3 going down, and Zandig actually came out. I want to say it was the following month at Answering the Challenge, and straight up apologized to the fans and the wrestlers in the back for continually bringing these ECW guys in who didn't give a fuck about any of them and couldn't care less about what CZW was and what they were building. And, like, he straight up, like, apologized on the mic to everyone. It was like, wow. And so, like, yeah, you see a lot of this stuff where it's like, set up angle, okay, see you next show, motherfucker. And they're like, yeah, no, you're going to pay me more, otherwise it's not happening. And Zandig was not about to negotiate with terrorists. That dude was like, good, fuck you, and like just moved on, where some of these guys would find a way to pay them what they're asking for. He's just like, fuck you, I'll tell the fans what a dickhead you are.
Yeah, and I don't know if, you know, so Zandig challenging him, even when he's challenging him, it almost looks like he knows Tommy's not showing up, but he's just going to throw it out there just in case, because, mm-hmm. you know, he says it in some way of, you know, White Theater Pain next Saturday, it's me and Kasai, and you know, you too, Dreamer, if you want to be involved or something like that, right? So you can even tell he's kind of already like, yeah, he's not coming back. I thought it was interesting. You definitely see the difference. The chair shots with barbed wire around the person are, you know, again, kind of crazy. Zandig still wrestling with his shirt on here a lot, or fighting with his shirt on. You know, I think he gets a little bit more into the bare shirt piece in a little bit. But Kasai's definitely got no shirt on. And like I said, you can see the barbs you know, in his skin and almost sticking out, you know, a quarter inch away. Again, it's some nasty stuff. And, you know, overall from this show for me, again, a really good show. I think last show in Sewell was a little bit better, but wow, what a difference a Wednesday makes, because this is nowhere near the absolute the disaster in Delaware from the first show. This is a good show front to back. I have nothing that was like terrible on this besides Fast Eddie, but I'm just used to that now. I thought it was a really good show from front to back, and you know, excited again to go to what happened Saturday back in Sewell.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, as they mentioned on commentary, this is the Wednesday before the Saturday show that we will be reviewing next, which is The Bosses Back 2001. I think they had to add that in because they renamed another show that later on in the future, but it wasn't like an annual show. But yeah, so we're back in Sewell for that one, continuation of some of this stuff. We will see more of the Maximos, the SAT, you know, those guys in there next show, so that's great, because I really thought their run with CZW was excellent. You get some really, really good lucha stuff. So much of the stuff that, you know, the future was built on, you know, the guys that you're seeing, these commanders and these this and that, so much of this stuff in the early 2000s, the SAT were innovating so much of it.
Yeah, so, you know, we got that coming up, and to that point, right, you know, AEW is a little bit of the CZW to me right now. You know, when I watch that, I hate to call it this because I think it's an overused term, but the amount of botches, right, that AEW has, you're seeing these in this early CZW stuff, and you know, quite frankly, this is still better than what's on TV now on that AEW side. I didn't watch Wrestle Dream last night. I you know, I'm not paying $50 for it. I've given Tony enough of my money, and
say
it again.
AEW shows. The AEW's Wrestle
Dream.
Yeah.
So that was their okay. Pay-per-view last night, and you know, I'm quite frankly, I've given Tony Khan probably $300 of my money over pay-per-views over the last couple of years. I don't watch all of them. You know, I have Peacock, so I don't have to deal with the WWE paying the $50, and I've been disappointed every
right.
time. So I just kind of refuse to buy another one. I'll catch it on the highlights, on social media. But you know, there is one that was very recent in AEW. I don't know if it was on Wrestle Dream or not, but the referee actually had to reach his hand in and put the girl's shoulder down for the 3 count. So again, you're seeing that stuff, but you're not seeing it, you know, you shouldn't be seeing it on something that's on national TV. So again, I get it, and I understand that you're going to see them. I'm still going to call them out when they happen, you know, with the Fast Eddie triple step to the discus clothesline. But you know, just putting it in perspective, I'm not tearing these folks up. I know it's a part of it. And quite frankly, you know, if you're watching AEW right now, you're better off going to 2001 CZW because you're going to get much better action than what you're getting on TV, on IWTV, with just a little, you know, without the HD, so the camera works a little bit rougher. But yeah, and then this weekend, Jay, I'm pretty sure you caught a little glimpse of it or whatnot. We had a really nasty spot in GCW. I know we don't really, you know, we're talking about old CZW, but we're putting out so many shows that I doubt you're going to do a Yakuza Kick show on your own right now. Maybe you will, but we're putting out shows almost every day right now. And you want to quickly hit on the flaming table spot?
Yeah, I saw the spot. I sent it over to you just because it's current and just like, hey man, look at this crazy shit. But yeah, so Joey Janela took a double choke slam through a very, very hot flaming table. And he wore a shirt, which is, you know, the thing is because my friend Anthony just got set on fire not long ago, and like brutally, and it was really bad. And everybody, you know, that wanted to laughed and whatever it was. So this thing crossed the indies pretty heavily. And it was, again, kind of mocked a lot. so for another guy who's way more experienced, way more well-versed in all of these type of things, saw all the shit, to still go in there with the shirt on, knowing how much fluid they put on that thing, and then what happens? Oh, the shirt catches on fire. Who could have known? So now he's got to claw the shirt off of himself to stop burning. Now he's in a burn ward, you know. I love Joey Janela because, to me, he's a Jersey guy. Like, he just bleeds Jersey. He's just that instigator, troublemaking. He's always up to some shit. I just, something about Joey I've always liked. But yeah, man, this is a rough decision to make at this point in your life. And I hope he heals up fast, because I know my boy Anthony, he was in the hospital for like a month. And Joey's is probably not as bad as his, but man, that sucks.
So time out. I don't know who Anthony is, nor the thing you're talking about. The way you said it, it sounded more. Okay.
I'll catch you up on it real quick. But Anthony Mossow is a friend of mine. He's the North Korean assassin, and he pretty much decided he wanted to, in his 40s, as a lifelong wrestling fan, he's an avid collector of many, many things. He decided in his 40s he wanted to fulfill his lifelong dream of being involved in some of this wrestling, and not just wrestling, deathmatch wrestling. I think his gimmick is very cool because he's, you know, he's got this North Korean assassin gimmick, and he's very over the top as far as his character portrayal, because he's a very big fan of the old school, the characters, the, you know, the show about it, not just the let's see how crazy we can get. But he got into a match. Yeah, and a lot of his stuff I think you'd love just based on his portrayal. But this match was a bad decision. He went into a match, was a three-way, and it was Pondo and Shadow WX from Japan and him. Well, there was a fireball spot where Shadow WX was supposed to throw, you know, spit fire at him. I've never seen a guy spit this much fire this close to another human being. It engulfed, like, pretty much the top half of his body in flames, and again, he spent the next probably month in a burn unit and got skin grafts and all that other shit. So, yeah, it was pretty fucking wild, and you know, like I said, because he was so late to the game coming in and not as experienced, people clowned him for inexperience and all that. I mean, the first thing I told him when I saw the clip was, holy shit, that was dumb. So, you know, I'm not protecting the decision whatsoever, but again, this made its rounds in the community so heavily within a year's time. I don't want to see experienced people getting majorly burnt, because we saw such a cautionary tale a minute ago.
Yeah, so was this up in Michigan in an outdoor show?
No, it wasn't in Michigan. It was in Jersey at X Brand Wrestling. So rather than even sending you pictures or clips, you can go and check that out. On the IWTV, I'll show you the which show or whatever.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I think I actually seen it, because I do know, you know, I do remember seeing this North Korean assassin character, and I do remember Pondo being in the ring, and I remember the fireball. I thought it was outside, and again, maybe I'm getting that a little off, because, you know, just to put everything in context, when I'm a big fan of PlayStation 5, and, you know, right now college football game, so I usually throw deathmatch wrestling that's current on my iPad as I'm playing, and then, you know, I put one earphone in, getting probably too deep into this, but you put one earphone in, and when I hear the announcers get excited, I kind of, you know, turn my head and look over, hit the pause button to see what's going on. So I'm really just kind of watching the spots, which isn't my favorite thing, but it's, you know, again, it gives me a little entertainment on a Friday, Saturday night. So I do remember this spot. And I do remember catching it, because just, you know, Pondo and thing being in the ring and the North Korean assassin. With that being said, back over to the Janela thing, you know, Jay, to your point, maybe it's me maturing, maybe it's me getting older, but we've had actually two, right? I said I've seen the Masada, you know, burning his face trying to throw a fireball with XPW not too long ago, and that was absolutely disgusting. And then I seen this, like you said, you know, indie guys out there, couple things. One, the way they set this up, and you had an experienced guy with Bubba Ray in the ring. right? Bubba Ray is one of the two that does it. And Cardona is experienced, not so much in the deathmatch stuff, but, you know, Bully Ray's been around some of this dumb, this, and I'm going to say it this way, this dumb stuff. And Mansur's been around for some of it. So they use two whole bottles of Zippo lighter fluid.
Yeah, that's wild.
And then as soon as they lit it, they choke slammed them through it. So you didn't even have a chance for the liquid to burn. So, again, to your point, who didn't think that he was going to get set on fire wearing a shirt with all that liquid that still hadn't burned off yet? So it's just a completely reckless spot, and a reckless spot by two guys that have been around forever in Cardona and Bubba Ray. You know, let the liquid burn. And the second thing is, we don't need a bonfire, right? I don't think as a fan, I don't want to see somebody get set on fire. That's not why I'm there. You know, you want to put the table spot in with the burning table. You know, put one line down the middle, let it burn for a second, and then let it be just enough fire that the body's going to put it out. It gives you the illusion. It gives you the holy shit. It gives you the I don't want to do that. You don't need to set somebody completely on fire like this. And again, hopefully, you know, I know Janela from his little bit of work that I've seen in GCW and early AEW. I think he's decent. I don't know him as a human. I do agree with you on the Jersey guy thing. Like, he reminds me of every guy I know from Jersey Shore area, not the TV show. A little baked, a little crazy. But I still don't want to see him get burned in the middle of a match. And, you know, there's a couple things from that GCW show last night that were a little over the top for me. That being one of them. And then, again, the Justice Payne spot, I think that's his name, coming off the scaffolding, you know, 30 feet to the ground is just fucking dumb.
Matthew Justice?
Yeah, that guy.
Matthew?
Yeah.
Not Justice Payne.
Payne's, from CZW. Sorry, screwing up my justices. But, yeah, Matthew Justice, you know, Jay, if you haven't seen it, it's on, you know, it's on social media as well. You know, he's on top of scaffold, and he comes through some tables. But, again, just the – I don't know. There's just certain things that you're putting way too much risk in there. And you could have done this 10 feet lower and it still would have got the same applause, right? You know, you don't have to go to the fucking, you know, fourth story of a building to jump off of it. I think there, you know, you can do things in a safer way. You know, it seems like he's okay. I haven't seen anything where he's not, but, that spot happened right before this table spot where, Jimmy Lloyd hits him with a exploding barbed wire bat, and then he does a front flip through. And they had some tables set up down there. But, again, when you see how high up this is, it's just dumb, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, well, as far as the fire spot goes, like, I mean, man, you know, the thing with fire is there's just the more fire, the cooler it looks. Fire spots look awesome. I love fire spots, but, you know, the more fire, the cooler it looks, just like the more light tubes, the cooler, you know, all of that stuff. But with fire, there is a certain amount of fire that can no longer be done safely. And that's just, regardless of how cool it looks, there is a bar that you guys should learn that once you pass that, plan on a hospital stay, because it's just not ending well. No one's ever prepared for this shit, number one. Number two is, yeah, there's just a certain amount of fire that you can't safely fall through, and I don't think that's a wild statement to make.
Yeah, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly there. You know, and there's a picture on one of the Instagram things that you know gets credit to the person. Sorry, I don't have all that information in front of me, but you can see the ref and Bully Ray's face here of oh fuck. Right, like as soon as it's happening, like it's again, it's not this holy shit face. It's an oh fuck face, and there's a big difference between the two, I think.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Hopefully Janela's okay.
Once you go into that move, there's a certain amount of commitment that even if you know it's gonna go bad, you just gotta kind of hope for the best or stop it and completely just ruin the show. So it's like, I'm sure there's a lot of those moments where they look like, oh, shit. And honestly, we will actually hit a lot of those moments as we go forward that, you know, we've heard interviews and we've talked to some of these guys on the show over the years, and they'd say, yeah, the tables were too close, but then we were just like, well, fucking, we got to do what we got to do. You know, like, you could see, you know, they have to alter the spot and sometimes, but when it comes to fire, man, what are you going to do? Either you miss the fire completely or you take it and it's not going to be good.
Yeah, I just wish they would have let it burn a little bit more so that liquid could have got off, because I think that's what the problem was. I think Janela, obviously got the lighter fluid on him, and, you know, also the type of shirt he was wearing wasn't it was more of like a polyester-style shirt, right? So that's gonna burn differently and quicker than a cotton-style shirt. So I think there was a couple things that weren't really thought out here. You know, spandex and fire don't work. You know, even when there's no fire spots, you learn that with, I believe it's Undertaker and one of the Road Warriors at one point burning themselves on motorcycles, even where the spandex style is just going to stick to your skin versus a cotton that's going to burn, you know, but not stick to your skin. And I do think there's a big difference there. Then, like I said, and I bought again.
To that point, I really think that there is no better time in human history that you can look at where the label on the shirt that tells you whether it's flame retardant or not, I don't think that there is any time where that label is more relevant in life than when you're going to do a death match involving fire where you purposely fall through it, because you can't prepare for a house fire or anything like that as opposed to what you're wearing that day. But, like, we're going to do some major fire shit, and I'm going to go into it. Let me double check that tag, because this could change my night, my week, my month. You know, I mean, I would take extra precaution as far as the tags go when it comes to this type of thing.
Yeah, to that point, you know, read past the Made in Thailand piece and kind of flip it over and see what it says after that.
Yeah, what does it say about fire on that shirt?
Yeah. And just if you're not good at the reading part, or maybe you can't see the label that well, the polyester spandex stuff is not what you want to be wearing when you go through fire. That's the stuff that's going to stick to you quickly. It's like, it's plastic. That's what it's made out of, recycled plastic. And, you know, that good old fashioned cotton every once in a while is the right move. The shirt might not look as cool. Your muscles might not look as big, but you're going to be a hell of a lot better if you're insisting on wearing the shirt because you're going to get hit by all kinds of shit beforehand, that you want to have that little bit of protection. Go with the old school cotton in these moves. It's probably going to work out a hell of a lot better.
Same shit that Tony's shirt was made out of. So.
Oh, yeah. See? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, again, same thing. Guys, it's okay to throw on the old school style T-shirt. Like I said, it's not as form fitting or as flattering. But you know, if you're doing a spot that involves fire, polyester or any of those style polyester shirts are not the way to go. Spandex and polyester and fire just do not mix.
Told me. He said, "Davis, I had to rip the shirt off of me because it was going to melt onto my skin." And, like, this guy still had third-degree burns. So it's like, if he didn't do that, yeah, he would have been in big trouble because the same exact thing happened. And, again, he didn't check the tag, but as soon as the fire hit him, it went through his brain, get this fucking shirt off before this goes way worse than it did. So, yeah, it's back to the tag.
Yeah. So hopefully, Anthony's okay. Hopefully Joey Janela's okay. Masada's made a comeback, but he was out for damn near a year. And just, you know, any of the other guys that may listen, or if you know somebody that's in the business that is into this deathmatch stuff, right, let's be smart about it. It's not, you know, if you sell one less T-shirt, it's still better than the hospital bill. You're not going to make up that money difference, I don't think, when it comes to it, especially if you got a long stay in the hospital.
Yeah, and that T-shirt you're selling is a better option to wear than what you planned.
Yep. So, yeah, so, you know, that's a little bit on the current stuff. And then the other, and Jay, I didn't prep you with this at all. I flipped on IHB for their coming back, and I can't tell you how great it was Big F and Joe got Danny to, literally quit in a match. So awkward ending to his match. because D'Amato just quit in the middle of it. Wow. You know, then got on the mic and said how he's retiring from wrestling or whatnot for a little while. But, you know, after the comments a couple of weeks ago, good. I'm happy that you were so either injured or just not mentally into it or whatever bullshit excuse you want to give. But you wound up looking like a complete and total ass because you quit in the middle of the match and just let the guy pin you where the referee had to stop and look down and then put the three count because clearly it was not supposed to be the end, and couldn't happen to a better guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's great to hear. I mean, Danny wasn't good at his healthiest, so I don't know what makes him think if he's got something going on, he could still perform or create some kind of moments, because he's always been in a realm that he never belonged in. You know, when he stood in the Howell building in GCW, wrestling drew blood, and he was trying to convert himself into a deathmatch wrestler, just like he tried to convert himself into a high flyer and shattered his leg in front of me in Bayonne. In this instance, he held the light tubes over his head and shouted to the crowd, "Ultra violence, yes or no?" And I just went, "I'll be goddamn this motherfucker." Like, you can't be less cool than that shit. So when he has that amount of self-awareness, you can only expect this type of performance. So
yeah, it was ugly. But yeah, you know, I can imagine that Joe wasn't happy, you know, nor the folks that are working for you, where you're quitting in the middle of it, but yet you're running a show where you're expecting these guys to do stuff that clearly you're not able to do or want to do. So, you know, you said on your little promo that the federation's going to continue, the promotion's going to continue, but if I'm one of the guys in the back, I understand it's a payday, but this guy is quitting in the middle of shit, making your show look like shit as a whole, and then you're going to, you know, he's going to ask you to go out there for a couple bucks and do it when he's clearly too pussy to do it himself. And I'll say that as somebody that will be self-admitting and say, I wouldn't do it myself, but in something like this, I wouldn't be asking other people to do it as well if I'm quitting in the middle of a match and making an awkward finish like that happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting there.
Yeah, so that's been a little of the, deathmatch wrestling today segment of our show. But yeah, that's some stuff that's happening. Jay, it's on the last IHB. It's right in the middle of the show. If you want to go check it out, but like I said, and I'll hold by it. Even if it was a spot or a gimmick, or they're going to turn it into that it was a spot, or it was, you know, supposed to happen that way, it looked extremely poor, and it absolutely ruined the entire show, because we had a guy that took a DDP. And then just laid there and refused to kick out, making the referee look bad, making Joe look bad, making everybody associated with that, including, you know, using the H2O zone, everybody looked bad because guy just quit on a DDT in a death match, just literally quit.
I mean, I don't know about making the H2O zone look bad. I mean, Tremont lives in the fucking building, so if that doesn't make it look bad, then I don't know what does. But anyway.
Yep. So with that, you know, we'll continue to do the classics thing. But if there's any, you know, crazy stuff that hits the internet or you know, we see, we will briefly touch on it as we did here. But yeah, Jay, over to you to kind of wrap us up and send us to next week.
Yeah, man. So next show we will be heading back to Sewell for The Boss Is Back, and this is only 3 days beyond the show we just covered. So, you know, you keep track of what this guy went through and that guy went through, Kasai pulling wire out of his back and all this other stuff. And we will see you in 3 days talking about Sewell, New Jersey. Probably do that one Tuesday-ish or something like that. So keep your eyes open. Hope you guys are following along. And we will talk to you then.
See you.
Bruce.
Talk to y'all later. Have a nice night. Stay dry. It's raining again. I'm tired as rain. Makes my grass green. I won't complain about that. That's all I gotta say.
I'm out of here.
I love all of y'all, and, shit.
We're all a bunch of fucking assholes.
You've been in the gym, bro.
You know why?
DJ Hyde, fuck you.
You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me.
I'll listen to your podcast, and I'll find everything out. You know what I mean?
You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy. So, what am I you?
Good. Black Cheese tells me all the time to listen to what you gotta say, because you be blazing people. And I'm like, well, I gotta hear it now.
You just know how to hide. Me, I don't have that part. Me, I always tell the truth, even when I lie.
Yakuza Kick Radio. Jesus!
So say good night to the bad guy.
I'm gonna tell you something straight off the motherfucking press. I ain't coming for no fools.